because that's the part of the homily. You know, all through this cycle, this lectionary cycle, we've been hearing from the Gospel of Mark. And we've talked a couple of times about some of the more technical dimensions of that Gospel, on how it's short and how it's to the point and uses fairly common language. And particularly how Mark has this unique way of getting stories across. And he sort of splits one story in half and inserts another one. Why, he did that again today. But those who, in their wisdom, put our lectionary together, they took the center story out. So if you look at the scripture reference, you'll see that there's some verses, and then there's a whole, and then there's some more verses. The whole structure that Mark's used is like bookends. You have a bookend, and then you have books, and then you have another bookend. Well, today, we're looking not at the books in the middle, but we're looking at the bookends. And there's a certain wisdom in that, too. Part of it's practical, because actually, beginning next week, we will hear all about that centerpiece that was missing. We'll hear it from the Gospel of John, how Jesus fed the 5,000. And as usually happens during this cycle of the lectionary year, we will hear about it, and hear about it, and hear about it for the next 3 weeks or so. So good that they took it out, because we didn't want to add another week to that. Well, there's a bit more wisdom to that as well, because you see, as we look at things and we look at these bookends, it gives us an opportunity to think more carefully about what's happening in this gospel lesson, in this gospel passage. Think about it in the way it's described. Here's Jesus. You know, he and his disciples are going around from place to place. They're teaching, they're healing, they're doing all these wonderful things. It's hard work. And so Jesus decides they need a rest. He kind of wanted to give his disciples a day off, as it were. And so as the gospel lesson opens, we hear how Jesus said to them, let's go off to a deserted place by ourselves. And so, you know, they went off to some place and people kept following them. So they figured out it's easier if we just get in the boat, because they can't follow us there. So they get in a boat and they launch the boat and they go over, and then somebody kind of was watching what direction they went in, and they realized where they were going to end up. And so there they went, and they went running all the way around the lake to where Jesus more than likely would put in the boat, because you could only moor a boat that large in certain places. And so there they were. Here were the disciples. You can imagine what the disciples were saying. Oh my goodness, you know, we're supposed to have a day off, and look at them, they're everywhere. And Mark also gives you this sense of this wonderful energy going on, this people almost like running from here to there, constantly in movement, constantly actually looking for Jesus. And so they follow Jesus wherever he goes. They were so active about it that they would, you know, they would say, where is he now? Where is he now? Sort of like, where's Waldo? They would constantly be going all over the place looking. If he was in that house or that farm or that marketplace, they would find him, they would seek him out, and then they would bring their sick and all the others to him and expect him to work some great work for them. Almost get the picture, people running around willy-nilly. My mom used to call this like running around with your head cut off, like a chicken without a head. You know, so that, get that picture. That's what's going on. These people are just everywhere, and they're constantly following him, running after Jesus. And so here they go, running around the lake, and they find him at the other side. Jesus gets off the boat, and rather than just kind of throw up his hands and say, no, office is closed today, he rather looks at them, and the gospel writer says, he had compassion. Now, an older translation that we might be familiar with used a different word. That translation used the word pity. He had pity on them. Now, in our context, in our culture, with the way we use language today, we see pity and we kind of think of a different way. We think pretty much that, you have pity on somebody who is less well off than you. That, you look at yourself and you say, I've got everything I need and, I got more than enough and all those, that poor soul, they really need something. So here, I'll reach into my excess, into my extra, and give to them a little bit so that their life is a little bit better. It's almost sort of a condescending attitude to have pity on somebody. We hear, that's the way we use the word. Nothing wrong with it, just the way we use it. And so the writers, the translators of this particular gospel lesson that we chose for the lectionary use the word compassion. Now, last night, if you were at the 5 o'clock service, the vigil service down at the chapel downstairs, you would have heard yet even another translation. And I like that one. It's one reason we use it. I can get away with doing that at 5 on Saturday. I can't quite do that here on Sunday morning. But that translation said it this way. Jesus looked at them and his heart broke. His heart broke. Think of that a little bit. And let's go back to this notion of compassion. What is this word, compassion? What does it mean? Well, it comes from a Latin word, actually two words that are kind of put together. One of them is the preposition that means with. That's the first part of that word. The C-O-M part of it would mean with. And then there's the second part of the word passion or passio in Latin, which is a verb. And what it means is to suffer. Now, even that word's a little hard, to suffer. We think of suffering as, again, sort of the recipient of pity. Somebody who's suffering illness or suffering a loss or suffering something else going on. But this kind of use of the word is a little bit more like that wonderful verse that we hear in another place when Jesus talks to the disciples and they're trying to keep the children away from them. My first parish where I was ever assigned, we had a day school, and right there, etched in the cornerstone, were these words, "Suffer the little children, come unto me." That's the way suffer, passio, is being used there. It's sort of a reaching out in solidarity. Reaching out in solidarity with the people who are so hurting. So when the translator uses this word, compassion, he's saying that Jesus is reaching out to them. And if we put that together with this notion of the broken heart, we begin to realize that there's something very profound there for us. In Christian iconography, in Christian symbolism, there has for a very long time been a focus on the heart of Jesus. You'll see sometimes that I sign my rector's corners in the newsletters, "In the loving heart of Christ, I am yours sincerely," whatever. It's in that sense that I'm using that. I grew up with that iconography, with that image about the heart of Jesus being the very center of Jesus' love for us, for his disciples, and for the world. So the heart of Jesus breaking isn't so much a kind of breaking heart like when you're spurned by a lover or something is leaving you, someone dear to you is dying, and not that kind of broken heart, but rather the heart of Jesus breaks, and it breaks open. And it breaks open and a great love pours out of it. Great love pours out of the broken heart of Jesus. A love that can fill the earth, fill the world. And so in this passage, when Jesus is seeing all of these people going willy-nilly, as my mom would say, with like chicken Christians with their heads cut off, just trying to follow and find this Jesus. Jesus looks at them and his heart breaks. It opens up and Jesus' love goes out to them. Jesus does this because he knows. He knows the human heart well because he too was a human being. You know, another thing about our society as we're growing up, we're always taught to put on a brave face, keep the good faith. You know, those of us who are of British extraction, you know, perhaps we were taught to keep a stiff upper lip. Don't be telling people what's on your mind, or, you know, don't be showing your emotions. A sort of steadiness. How many times you've asked somebody, "How are you doing today?" They'll say, "I'm fine." Like an automatic answer. If you really know them, probably you know that they're far from fine. But they'll say it anyway because that's what we sort of demand of each other. When somebody actually starts telling you how they feel, you usually go like, "I'm sorry I asked that question." You know, so that's the way we are. You know, it's like, okay, everybody kind of keep their problems and their issues to themselves, and we all just sort of make like it's all nice. We keep this facade up. Strength of being in control. Not having any worries, not having any anxieties. But our lives, unfortunately, are filled with anxiety. And anxiety often comes from fear. And fear fills our hearts. Perhaps it's anxiety because we suffer from some sort of chronic ailment or illness and we're constantly bothered by it, or it's something we can't quite nail down. We don't know how to treat it or how to get better. That can bring tremendous anxiety and even great fear. Or perhaps things aren't going so well in our family life, and our marriage is a little tenuous, and we're afraid that things might go south, and so we are filled with anxiety. Or we buy a new house, and you never not quite know what's under that carpet. And so there's fear there, and so there's an anxiety within there. Or perhaps it's because things are a little tight at work. The economy is not quite so good, and so suddenly you begin to be afraid that you might lose your job. And so suddenly there's great anxiety there. We all have it, one form or another. I just mentioned a few of them. We all have those fears, and we all have anxiety in our lives. And you know what? Jesus knows this. Why would Jesus know this? Jesus would know this because Jesus was one like us in all things but sin. Jesus knows what we are like and what's impacting our lives underneath that nice facade of that brave face or that stiff upper lip. Jesus knows what's deep down in there. And when Jesus looks beyond our facades, our false faces, and looks inside of our hearts, which he is able to do, his heart breaks. His heart breaks that we suffer so. His heart breaks because we need such healing. His heart breaks because we are not made whole and entire as God intended us to be. But his heart breaks not in some sense of pity and condescension and, "Oh, isn't that too bad?" Rather, his heart is breaking so that the love that is contained in that heart can flow out into the world and onto you and address and cure those fears and address and take away those anxieties so that we don't run willy-nilly looking for some sort of solution to the problems we have, but rather we see these problems all taken care of by none other than Jesus. So when we're honest with ourselves and we're alone in our houses, and we allow the false face to fall away, the facade to be torn down, and we are most honest with ourselves, as we must be with God, where do we go? Like the people in the gospel lesson today, we need to run. But where do we run? We run to Jesus. We look for Jesus wherever he can be found. We run to Jesus. And all we want to do is grab the hem of his garment, just enough to be healed, to be made whole again, so we can get through this day and confront the next. Jesus, his heart is breaking. But it's not breaking because we're bad. It's breaking because we need the love of God that is so abundant and so present within it. Jesus' heart is breaking. Jesus is having compassion, not only for those people in that faraway place in a faraway time. Jesus has compassion for you and for me this day and always. But that heart breaks open so that the love of God flows over us like an ever-present river, flowing abundantly, flowing without end, and filling our hearts with the love of God. This is where we find Jesus, in the fellowship of believers, in the fellowship of this table, as we profess our faith together, and we become the very presence of Christ in the world. We are the healing power of Jesus. We are the heart of Jesus that must be broken open so that the love of God flows out of us and into a world that needs it so deeply. We are the heart of Christ. We are shown compassion. And because we have known compassion, we must give compassion to others. We must allow our hearts to be broken, not in sadness, but to be broken open, so that the love we have received can now be shared out. That's what Jesus does. So if you find fear and anxiety in your life, run to Jesus. If you see that somehow there's a lack of wholeness or peace in your life, look for Jesus. If you need somehow to make everything whole again, run. Run. Run.